Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
We know that feeling here at Frat House Sports because that's what we do here, a couple of times a week. And, hey, yes, indeed, you've got Frat House Mike coming back to you here on a Tuesday evening for our second edition from the Frat House Sports Radio Network of the Red Zone Blitz. As we head into week four, can you believe this already, folks? Yeah, we're 2 days right into it at this point. We're 2 days away from week four of the NFL football season. One quarter of the entire NFL football season will be concluded as of next Monday. And before I bring my co-host in with us here, I just got one question I want to start out the program with this evening, and you can jump in on this anytime at all during the course of the evening. And as we've just concluded week three, and mind you, it's early yet. Come on, it's very, very early. What does it really matter? But as we have concluded week three, and you look around the league, and you see the Buffalo Bills leading the AFC East, you've got the Cincinnati Bengals, who are undefeated at 3-0. The Houston Texans 2-1. Huh? Seriously, the Philadelphia Eagles right now are 3-0. My question to everybody out there that's listening is this what you would have expected from the NFL this early in the season? Is this the way you would have expected this league to look this early on? And if you've got an answer to that and you want to jump in with us, 347-826-9964 is what I want you to do. That's what you got to do. You got to call us right here and let us know, because many of the things that we're going to be talking about through the course in the next hour have a lot to do with all of that. It has to do with, wow, interesting look to this league right now as we are 3 weeks into it.
You can certainly say that. You got me
now? There you go. There you go. Yeah. We got Brandon with us. Thank you very much, Brandon, for joining us. No big deal.
I had a little technical glitch. I'm not quite sure what was wrong, to be honest with you.
That's all right.
I think it was a Skype issue, but we'll broach that another time.
I had a question I wanted to open the show with, and hopefully everybody heard it. And if they want to jump in on that question, 347-826-9964. I was just mentioning, from my perspective, we've seen a lot of great football in the first 3 weeks. But from my perspective, I didn't exactly expect the league to be looking like this. I didn't expect the Cincinnati Bengals to be 3-0. I didn't expect the San Francisco 49ers to be 1-2. I didn't expect the Arizona Cardinals to be 3-0. But these are all topics that we're going to get into, hopefully, within the course of this hour that we're here with you.
That Arizona Cardinals team, they knocked off the Seahawks and the 49ers on route to 3-0 too. So with a backup quarterback for two of the three games.
Yeah, no easy schedule early for them. No.
I mean, they're you know, certainly very impressive. Yep. Clearly that team's led by defense as it was last year, but there's more to it than that. I mean, I think Bruce Arians has them playing at a high level very, very mistake-free football, and, you know, they're getting the job done against the best so far, which is, wow.
Well, we're going to take a look at what I thought we might do is we'll take a look at a couple of games that kind of jumped off the map at us from this past weekend. And, of course, if there are any others that we don't necessarily touch on, Brandon, if you want to throw something in that I'm not putting out there, or if there's a listener who wants to jump in on a particular game that perhaps maybe we don't get to, certainly give us a call, 347-826-9964. And I'm hoping here, I got an hour, I'm hoping I can, I might be leaning on you a little bit there, Brandon, because my voice goes all of a sudden.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, a little early. I think in a little early fall allergy or something has really got me, got the voice kind of cutting in and out on me a little bit. But let's start out with the first game that I highlighted anyhow. This was a game that we talked about last Thursday on our Frat House Sports Show and that we all kind of jumped in on, and that was one of our four games that we highlighted last Thursday night on our Frat House Sports Show program. And that's the Detroit Lions and the Green Bay Packers. And Detroit ultimately came out of that from home. They were at home there. They won that game 19-7. And I think the thing that I came away from with this one is, where in the world is Aaron Rodgers so far this year? Because
where in the world is the whole offense? Eddie Lacy did nothing on my fantasy team as well.
Where's the offensive line?
I think you just nailed the nail on the head right there with that. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is having enough time to, you know, look downfield and find his receivers, and clearly their running game is anemic. So I think you just hit it right there. That's the crux of the Tampa Bay offensive problems right now.
We kind of knew, I think, going into the season. I mean, at least they weren't being – the Green Bay Packers were not being promoted – as necessarily being a ground team anyhow. I think perhaps maybe some of the early prognostications would be that they would have enough to be able to hold their own, but that obviously Green Bay was going to be known as an aerial team. We've known for many, many seasons, however, one of their Achilles heels has been their offensive line. And year after year after year, we see the same thing. Aaron Rodgers on his back. Aaron Rodgers getting sacked. This season, no different. Right now, tied third in sacks with 9 already. Only Chad Henne with 16. And I'm trying to look here. Alex Smith with 11 are ahead of him. This offensive line is really, really the problem to this team. Unless they address it somehow or another, I don't know if you can expect anything better from Green Bay, and maybe we're all talking out of our mind here to expect that this team could be a postseason team.
Well, I don't know what they can do at this point. I mean, building an offensive line, you know, is kind of an off-season project. You see a lot of teams go throughout the year if they lose a key player or two. I mean, even locally here in Philadelphia, everybody's screaming because Jason Kelce's out for – you know, a few weeks with a sports hernia, and what's that going to do to the offensive line? But, you know, I don't know what they can do short of, you know, you do see some trades once in a while in the NFL. You know, maybe the general manager out in Green Bay has got enough wherewithal to, you know, find a backup sitting on a bench somewhere who may or may not have, you know, the ability to help, but I don't think they can make a major improvement. I think, you know, they need to, you know, use the off season, potentially, you know, target some higher draft picks, maybe two, and grab a free agent or two, you know, and then maybe they can turn that line into something. But the way it is right now, I don't know what they can do. You know, maybe they can design some quicker progressions for Rodgers. You know, three steps, ball out of your hand kind of thing. Don't give the line a chance to hurt him kind of thing. Short of that, you know, game plan and, you know, go from there. Well, I don't know what else they can do.
Well, then, what you might be saying is what we see is what we've got. Richie Incognito sits out there as a possibility for a number of teams. His name's been brought up with specifically – with the Eagles. I don't think the Eagles would make a move on it. What you're thinking with Green Bay? Would they make a move on it?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the deal is. I don't know why they're staying away from him. I think he kind of got a raw deal with that whole Dolphins scandal last year to a degree. I'm sure he was a player in it, but from everything I read, there was multiple, it was like a gang mentality. You know, it was more than just one offensive lineman harassing the young rookie guy. I think he's kind of been made the scapegoat, and I don't know if there's a quote unquote hands-off policy right now in the NFL with this guy or what, but that would kind of, you know, fall into the collusion type area, but I don't know. I'm not sure. He was always a serviceable player. I mean, he wasn't, you know, like a Pro Bowler, but he certainly wasn't, you know, he could certainly help a team like Green Bay. I'm not quite sure.
I would agree.
It doesn't really make much sense.
We talk about the problems that Green Bay had. At the same time, we're almost like dismissing. I mean, when it comes right down to it, this was not a tremendously offensive. This wasn't an offensive juggernaut by any means on Detroit's side. They had exactly what? 2 touchdowns, a safety, and a field goal. And yet, Matt Stafford, I think right now, is ranked number 4, I believe, in the league. Yes, number 4. In yards, anyhow, ranked number 4 in yards in the league. Stafford has shown in the first 3 games to me to maybe have one game that reminded me of 2012. The other 2 games, one I thought was really bad, and this game was just kind of mediocre. I'm not sure.
I was just going to say, Matt Stafford, you know, they might have won the game, but Matt Stafford certainly didn't look stellar. He had 2 interceptions and a fumble. 3 turnovers. Green Bay should have been into this game a lot more than they were, you know, given the turnovers. Stafford had it out there. You know, he put it on the table for Green Bay. They just couldn't, you know, seize it. Their offense just wasn't able to score, wasn't able to move the ball. I mean, their numbers are really bad. As a matter of fact, if you look at this whole game, there's not a tremendous amount of yardage on either side of the ball. I guess it was played a little closer to the vest defensively, but you know, obviously Green Bay or Detroit won, and they're in a pretty good position in the NFC North at the moment, that's for sure.
Well, the interesting observation I was going to make there too, though, was that while it was openly discussed by many analysts, come on, in the NFC, the weakest division is going to be the NFC East. I'm looking at the North right now, and I'm saying, I don't know, maybe it's the North, because it certainly just appears to me to be up and down the line just a lot of mediocrity.
Well, Chicago's look good. I think Chicago's actually, of all of them, I think Chicago's probably looked the strongest. They find a way to win games. I know you're not particularly a big fan of Jay Cutler. I'm not really either, but, you know, he was on Monday Night Football last night. And, you know, they're throwing a stat up on the screen. He's 6-1 in Monday Night Football games. I mean, it doesn't we kind of were having a conversation about that. It doesn't strike you to be, you know, that he's that kind of player. But yet, you know, that's a pretty impressive number. They won that game handily. They the Bears seem to be pretty for real. I was, you know, originally I thought Green Bay was going to be the team to reckon with in that division. They're sitting in the basement. Minnesota's, they're putting Bridgewater in now. They're going to see what the young guy got. Detroit certainly looks like, you know, their last game wasn't the greatest, but they've looked good this year. So, you know, between Detroit and Chicago, I think that's where you're looking at the North at the moment.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I really kind of thought it was going to be Green Bay as well, but if they can't get that offensive line situation addressed before the beginning of next season, which is what it might turn out to be, it might be a long season for them. Let's jump over to an AFC matchup that, we sat here and watched the whole thing on Sunday, and it's a head-scratcher. New England won, but really, when it came right down to it, just barely, I mean, really, New England beat Oakland 16-9. And how many times during the course of that game did we sit there going, this shouldn't be this difficult? Seriously. There's been a lot of questions this week that I have heard from people beginning to start to question, Brady really is starting to look his age. Comments on that one, Brandon?
Well, yeah, he is. He is starting to look his age. I think they have a lot of similar issues with Green Bay at the moment. Their offensive line is not as coherent as I think Bill Belichick thought it was when he traded away Logan Mankins. I understand their philosophy of getting rid of a guy, you know, a year before rather than a year too late, due to age, contract, et cetera. But Brady was on his back a lot. And I don't know if it's a cohesive thing. Him and Edelman seem to be on the same page.
Yeah.
Gronkowski's looked good coming off an injury, but yep. he's clearly not in there every down, and he's certainly not the dominant force he's been in the past yet. So he's probably not drawing the coverage away from guys like Amendola, who's not there. And the big one I'm just finding astonishing was Brandon LaFell. They signed him as a free agent from the Panthers, and all preseason they were talking, oh, this is going to be Brady's new favorite target, finally a tall receiver. Half the time he's not even on the field. I'm not quite sure, what's going on with him. Looking at the stats, he had four catches, but they were almost non-existent catches. Like you pointed out, we watched the game, and I think I heard his name called once that stood out. Other areas where they've been good in the past is, the Shane Vereen, I guess you'd go back to the Danny Woodhead, Kevin Faulk days, out of the backfield kind of guy. It doesn't seem like they're using him as much as they should be in that role. When he's in there, he seems to make plays. He looks quick. I don't know why Belichick has, Stephen Ridley in there as much as he does. I mean, he's okay as a runner, but they're clearly not, moving the ball as they should on the ground. I think they'd do better with a little more Vereen out of the backfield.
I'll tell you, I think if there's one thing this team really, really needs right now, and I mean right now, it's a stand-up big-time runner. Somebody who can rush that ball and get you guys 5-6 yards a carry. The Patriots ran the ball 32 times for a total of 76 yards. Brandon, that's horrible. It's an average of 2.4 yards a carry.
I'm with you. You know what's missing, don't you? It's the backup in Pittsburgh, LeGarrette Blount, who was on the team last year. And, he did give you that burst, that tough running. We don't seem to have a quote-unquote tough runner right now. I think that's the problem. I think that's what's missing. I don't understand why they didn't keep him. It's not like he got a huge contract in Pittsburgh. He signed backup money. I'm really kind of perplexed. He had a good season. He had an excellent playoff. I mean, that one playoff game, he was an absolute beast. At the end of last year, I'm not quite sure. I don't really get the thinking on that. I think they've been waiting for Stephen Ridley to be that back. And every time Stephen Ridley starts to gain a little traction, he ends up putting the ball on the ground. Now, he hasn't done that this year. He hasn't done the massive amounts of fumbles yet. But, he was one fumble away from being cut last year in my book. And, now they're featuring him.
I'll throw one out there for your consideration. I mean, look, New England's your team. Law firm's available. He's sitting around waiting for a team to pick him up.
Well, can I think the problem with law firm? I think law firm's tread on his tires is probably a little weak at this point. There are, as we've seen many, many times in the NFL, once you get a back on the plus side of 30, sometimes the tires just fall off. Other times, they're good. They're good into their, early to mid-30s. Other guys just seem to lose it. It's a brutal position. You take lots of pounding. And I have a feeling that's why he's sitting out there and not drawing any interest. There's other teams out there that could use a good back. If he still had something left in the tank, I think you'd see somebody picking him up, at least giving him a tryout. You don't even read of him going in for a tryout. I mean, the San Diego Chargers, they're down to their, practice squad. Matter of fact, they lost a guy off their practice squad to another team because they didn't act fast enough and bring him up to the roster after they lost Woodhead. They got, Ryan Matthews on the shelf for, at least 6 weeks. Woodhead's going for the year, the third string back put on a great, effort, but, that kind of pounding he's not going to be able to do every week. I think he had 36 touches last week, the third string runner for San Diego, and he did pretty solid. But, if the law firm ain't getting any looks from, teams out there who are already struggling for backs, Baltimore Ravens also come to mind. That would be a great fit. Now, obviously, the Ray Rice issue, they don't have him. Bernard Pierce, their backup, was out this week injured, and you don't even read of, Jarvis Green Ellis even getting you know, any looks. So
right, right.
I think the Patriots would rather go with Brandon Bolden and Vereen and Ridley, and you know they have another back. His name's escaping me. Who's like in his second year? He can't seem to make it onto the field, but he's not that mold that you're talking about. He's one of the little guys who can come in for a quick quick relief, but he's not going to be a big bulking driving back like Laufherne was in his prime and Blount was last year. Stephen Ridley kind of just doesn't have it. I don't think he's quite that bruiser of a back, and I think
I don't either. I agree with you.
I think that's where they're lacking.
The only reason I was thinking of Ben Jarvis Green Ellis for you guys is he's been with you guys before. Am I not correct?
Yeah, absolutely. He has.
He was with you for what? At least, a season or two?
Actually, I think it was closer to three or four, maybe even five. He was there for quite a while.
And so I'm thinking to myself, it might just be, an easy jigsaw fit right here. Hey,
It would be if he had, if he can run. There's seems to be some kind of an issue with him. I did read at the beginning of the season he was hurt and maybe he's not quite healed yet. Maybe that could be part of why he's out there, but.
All right. Well, folks, we're not alarmed. I mean, we're not sounding an alarm, but when you look at the AFC East, I think both Brandon and I, and most of us around here at the frat house would say, all right, so what? They're 2-1. They're tied for first place. Buffalo's ahead of them. That's probably not going to stay that way. Odds-on favorite still to win the East would be the New England Patriots.
Well, the only team that's even remotely scary is the Bills. The other two are just the joke they've been for many years and continue to be. Last I read, Miami wasn't even, naming their starting quarterback.
Well, apparently they did.
Ryan Tannehill may be done.
Apparently they did this evening. It's all cloak and dagger. NFL.com has reported this evening that the starter has been announced to the players. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. If that's the headline, that certainly doesn't sound good for Ryan Tannehill. My suspicion is you're going to see Matt Moore.
Wow. Well, what I had read was the coach wasn't there when he was drafted. The general manager who drafted him is gone. There's really nobody left in that organization who has a great love for Tannehill, and he hasn't stepped up and he hasn't, become the quote-unquote franchise quarterback.
Philbin has apparently worked with Moore in the past, and there's a little bit of a history there.
Yeah, I believe their paths crossed with Carolina, and I think that's why you might see him. Just to put a little footnote on Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, he is still recovering from a training camp injury. But there is expected to be interested in him very soon. Apparently the Ravens and Vikings have already talked to him, and when he's healthy, he may be doing some tryouts. So maybe that part of the issue, and maybe the Patriots will get in that mix too when he is healthy. So that explains.
Let me throw the number out here. 347-826-9964. That's how you jump in with us. We've talked about a couple of games that took place over this past weekend that kind of jumped out at us. What jumped out at you guys? Let us know. 347-826-9964. I want to run through a couple of these fairly quickly, Brandon, because I'm looking at the clock, and my gosh, already we've gone through 25 minutes.
Wow.
We had the Super Bowl. Yeah, we've had the Super Bowl rematch this past weekend. Seattle Seahawks won 26-20 against the Denver Broncos. That was up there in the house of the 12th man. So Seattle certainly had an advantage there that they didn't necessarily have with the Super Bowl, as the Super Bowl was played on neutral ground. But you certainly know where I came down on this one, and I'm going to stick by it. I'm sorry. Denver may have lost, but I'm going to tell you right now, I still think Denver is the better team. It took overtime for Seattle to win this. It was all tied up at 20-20. At the end of the game, and ultimately Seattle won it 26-20. Any thoughts on? We sat and watched it. It was a little bit of a nail biter, and I think probably also a little bit frustrating for everybody. I just found it to be a bit of a frustrating game to watch.
It was a little frustrating. The Seattle defense is very good at disrupting Peyton Manning, and you know, Peyton Manning, you know, likes to do his little Omaha show at the offensive line there pregame, and I don't, or pre-snap rather, and I just don't think it really matters to Seattle. Seattle's defense is pretty good at disrupting, and he never really got into a rhythm with Sanders. Wes Welker was not a factor in his first game back. And I'll be honest with you, the biggest factor I see Broncos offense this season, short of NoSean Moreno not being there, Monte Ball doesn't seem to be quite the back NoSean was, but where's Demaryius Thomas been? The deep pass downfield, I mean, all season I believe I remember two games ago, or in the second week, he had an 80-yard touchdown pass to Demaryius Thomas that was called back on a penalty. Short of that, Demaryius Thomas is not getting targeted as much as he was before, and he's their big play receiver. I mean, you know, Welker and Sanders are great for the little, you know, 8-yard and out, you know, let's catch a quick little pass, rhythm pass, or, you know, the behind the line and get the blockers in front of me and let's see what we got. But Demaryius Thomas is their downfield threat, and he just seems to be non-existent this year.
Well, wasn't Sherman all over him most of the time?
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm sure every defense is doing it, but Demaryius Thomas is a beast last year.
You're saying overall in the first three games?
Yes, I'm saying overall in the first three games, but I think it really played out in this game.
It really was evident in this one. Yes, I would agree with you.
I think this game was the biggest because, you know, the Broncos have looked good in other games. I mean, Julius Thomas, the tight end, has certainly filled the bill as the big, bulking, physical inside presence. But, you know, even him, he had a touchdown this week, but he wasn't as prominent as he's been in other games, and I think that's what's hurting them. And, as you know, clearly you had made it your statement that you believe the Broncos are a better team, and I don't agree with that. I'm sorry. I think Seattle's proven, you know, by beating them twice, you know, in the last six football games or whatever, however many games there are between them, you know, they've seemed to win. And yes, I would agree with your assessment from a fantasy point of view. The Broncos, yes, heads up Peyton Manning versus Russell Wilson, you know, but Russell Wilson is certainly closing the gap. And Peyton Manning still looks good. He's still putting up numbers. I don't think he's quite the presence he had last year. I think, I don't know. I don't know what the difference is. I'm not going to say he's showing the age, but I don't know. It's not quite the same. The only piece missing from their offense from last year, Eric Decker, I never saw him as that big a piece. And Emmanuel Sanders has certainly, you know, stepped up the production of what Decker had, if not more. But they don't look the same as dominating as they did. That last drive, you know, they started at their own 20, drove 80 yards in like 58 seconds, and they still had 18 to spare. They looked good. They were hitting on all eight cylinders. They came back, not only got the touchdown, but the 2 points to send it to overtime. And then, in all fairness to the Broncos, they never saw the field in overtime. Seattle took the opening kickoff for a touchdown. So, yes, it was a very good game, and – you know, I'd like to see them play in Denver, but unfortunately, being, you know...
Oh, I would too. I would love to see that.
Separate conferences, you're not going to see that. Probably for another 4 years, I guess that's how that all cycles out. So to see the game actually happen in Denver, you know, you're probably not going to have Peyton Manning and maybe not even the same Seahawks team.
With regard to your observation vis-a-vis Peyton Manning this year versus last year, if we were to go week three this year to week three of last year, I would say this. It certainly doesn't hurt when you get seven touchdowns in the very first game of the season.
Certainly.
We haven't seen that, obviously, right?
I'm not comparing it to that. I'm just saying.
But I will say this. Right now, Peyton Manning has the best QB rating of any quarterback in the entire league. He is not leading by virtue of yardage. Believe it or not, we're going to talk about that quarterback, and that's a shock to me. But the number one quarterback with regard to yardage is Peyton, or the number six is Peyton Manning, but number one in QB rating is Peyton Manning. So,
I'm not pointing the age. I'm just saying, spin the clock back to last year. You're going into, you know, week three. There's nobody who's even given the Broncos a remote challenge, even for half the game. And I think this year, you know, teams are hanging in closer with them. They're not blowing teams out like they were last year. I mean, I'm just looking at their overall points for, points against. You know, there's only about 8 points separating them, you know, for the two, you know, the two wins they do have. So, You know, I'm not. You're not getting the air of dominance like they've had before. And
well,
I think
and I will say this. I think that with while there were a lot of people inside the organization and in the fan base out there in Denver that were not real, real high on Knowshon Marino, I agree with you. I think Knowshon Marino was a slightly better runner, albeit a little more sketchy runner, than what we've seen from Monte Ball. I think he has a little more skill set than Knowshon Marino did. Now, interestingly enough, I read an article this evening that, in fact, and I'm not sure how this might work out, but apparently on the Denver Broncos radar right now is they are playing around with the idea of trying out Willis McGahee. So we'll see where that goes.
Wow, there's a name from the past. That's
yep.
an excellent.
How about that one?
Yeah.
How
I'm not
about
quite sure.
that one? I know. But I'll tell you, I do recognize that the running game is a bit of a problem. So my thinking is anything they want to try to do to address it, I think at least would be somewhat proactive. The Kansas City Chiefs won 34-15 over the Miami Dolphins. And the only reason I'm bringing this one up, Brandon, is because this was a Kansas City Chiefs game team that went into that game as an underdog, which shocked me. That was number one. But also a team that was 0-2 after, what, going 8-0 in the beginning of the season last year? This is a very different-looking Kansas City team. Not quite what we were expecting, I think, from what we saw at the beginning of last season.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what's up with Kansas City. I mean, short of their main running back being hurt and, you know, not playing, but they don't seem to have the what's the word? The defense. Their defense last year was very dominating.
A little more dominant. Yeah, more dominant. Yep.
And they just don't seem to have it right now. And I'm not sure, you know, what they're missing. They're not sacking the quarterback. They're not intercepting. They're not, you know, I'm not quite sure, but I think that's their missing piece. Alex Smith has been okay, but I don't think he's been as good as he started last year.
I think Alex Smith has shown exactly what a lot of people – I really think that last year was kind of an anomaly for Alex Smith. He got himself a new lease on life, and I think now what we're seeing is we're going back to the old Alex Smith. This is that mediocre Alex Smith that everybody's been talking about as being, hey, it's mediocre Alex Smith.
Right. Well, the other – if you remember correctly, last year Jamaal Charles started the season out as a beast, and he's missing from their lineup right now. So I think, you know, that's probably lending to Alex Smith maybe not being as prolific as he was last year at the beginning of the year. I mean, if you have a great running game makes a quarterback infinitely better. I mean, we've already discussed Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning, and all three of them are struggling with lack of a running game at the moment. And, well, that kind of same deal here. I mean, Niall Davis put out a great game.
He might take exception to what you're saying there. The guy had 32 carries and 132 yards. You know, it's not shabby, man. That's a 4.1 average. So,
No. I'm not. He had a great game. I mean, 132 yards, touchdown. You know, he was, you know, not bad at all. I'm just saying there were games, I believe, last year, at the beginning of last year, where Jamaal Charles was putting up close to almost 200 in some of them early games. And I think that just gave Alex Smith and The other part of the equation too that you miss sometimes is that wasn't expected last year. So teams were not expecting the Chiefs to come out like, you know, blazing guns. This year, you know, the teams are probably a little more ready for what Kansas City has to offer. I think you'll see them get better, and I think you'll see them contend for a wild card in the AFC. I still think they're a better team than a lot of the other mid-pack teams out there. I think it's just going to take time. I mean, we're very familiar with old Andy Reid, considering, you know, we lived with him in Philly for so long. And he's had slow starts and come back to have decent seasons. I don't see them, you know, winning their division, certainly not with the Broncos and Chargers out in the West. But they might be able to hang around and catch a wild card. It just depends how the rest of the league unfolds.
Wasn't there a game, I believe, sometime within the first 3 weeks last year where Jamaal Charles actually had 4 touchdowns in one game?
I think so, yeah. He was a beast early last year, and he just, you know, carried it throughout the season. And, you know, he had the Chiefs on the back. As a matter of fact, if you remember, towards the end of last season, the Chiefs kind of started losing a little steam. And, you know, it may have been the, you know, fast start that got them out to, you know, where they were and made the playoffs. But, you know, what's the word? I still think you'll still see them. I don't think they're going away.
What's the word on a Charles return?
Well, you know, they're saying ankle sprain. They've said high ankle sprain. They said maybe not a high ankle sprain. You know, from the sounds of things here and talking with our own Uncle Mark, I don't think we're going to see him. The Chiefs do play Monday night against the Patriots in the Monday night game, so they do have an extra day and the whole day. I mean, it's not till 8:30 at night. So, you know, possibly. But even if you do see him, you're not going to see, you know, generally the first game back from especially an ankle injury for a running back, he's not going to be dominant. He's certainly not going to, you know, set the world on fire with four touchdowns and 200 rushing yards, that's for sure.
Right, right. All right, and over on the Dolphins side, we already talked about it a little bit. If you're a Dolphins fan, well, it's already possible that your decision's been made for you. You may not be seeing Tannehill back right away anytime soon. Look for Matt Moore, potentially. I will say this. The Miami defense, fantasy-wise, had a rock'em sock'em day for me, having the best fantasy numbers of any defense in the entire league. So they did a good job on the defensive side of the ball. I've been saying that about Miami now for the better part of 2-3 seasons. They're not a bad defensive team.
I think they're even better this year. I mean, the first game against the Patriots was very evident when they won. The defense held when they had to. You know, we watched all that game, and I think that's certainly the strong part of their team. Their offense is a mess. I mean, they signed Mike Wallace for a lot of money as a receiver, and he certainly defines the diva wide receiver in the NFL.
Yep.
All he wants is long bomb, you know, throw me deep downfield every play, you know, and he certainly just isn't that back. He's not that receiver. You know, I thought, you know, Julius Thomas is one of those, or Demaryius Thomas, excuse me. You know, Dez Bryant in Dallas is certainly one of those who you can count on for the big plays. Julio Jones in Atlanta. There is a handful out there, but, you know, Mike Wallace certainly isn't earning that contract. And, you know, they have other guys on the team that, you know, at least you have Brian Hartline on your fantasy team. He's never really struck me as, you know, even, you know, Wes Welker-ish.
He's not having this season. He's not having the season he's had in years past. I'll be curious to see whether a QB change makes a difference there. That might be the difference. I don't know.
Well, it could.
Because
is Matt Moore the guy? I mean, I don't know that Matt Moore has had his opportunities. He had an opportunity with the Panthers, and I believe he was somewhere else last year. And, you know, he's just not – I don't know. I think he's had a few chances at it. And, you know, he's not a bad guy coming in off the bench if you need him. But I don't know that he's going to be your leader, your franchise quarterback, as they all like to say. Miami's had issues with this since Marino retired. They've not been able to find the next guy. So
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
Well, a lot of teams go through it. I mean, Denver had an issue with it till they signed Peyton, you know, after Elway. They tried a few guys. They had the Bubby Bristers.
Yeah, but it hasn't been as bad as
Miami.
It hasn't been quite as long as this.
They had Jake the Snake for a few years, and he decided to just up and retire. He actually played pretty well for them. And, you know, but whatever.
347-826-9964. One more game I just want to touch on really quickly. Because this one kind of, again, we're talking about games that jumped out at us. And by the way, too, folks, the mission of our program on Tuesday evening is we talk on field and on field only. All the off field stuff we save for the big program, the flagship program on Thursday night, which is our frat house sports program. But Tuesday night, we want to stick to what happened this past weekend and on the field. How about that?
X's and O's, as they say. X's and O's.
You got it. That's right. How about that Pittsburgh-Carolina game? Now, this was an interesting one because Pittsburgh goes into this as a 3.5-point underdog. Carolina, obviously favored. Over-under on the game, 41.5. This thing got blown away. Where in the world did all this offense come from for Pittsburgh as they throttled Carolina 37-19? And destroyed that over-under right there, won this game outright. Holy smokes. Suddenly, everybody in Pittsburgh is feeling real good about Ben Roethlisberger again as he ended up with a 112.6 QB rating. Holy smokes.
They did most of that on the ground. They had two running backs that had over 100 yards.
Yep.
the marijuana smoking brothers Bell and Blunt together had had a little over 250 yards, 260 yards. Ben Roethlisberger had, you know, was 22 of 30 for 196, two touchdowns. You know, that's a solid game, no interceptions. He's another one who's, you know, Roethlisberger always is running for his life. But
I
yet
hear
they,
you, Brady.
They seem to be able to run block. I mean, the running numbers in this game were phenomenal. I mean,
264 yards on the ground, a 7.8 yard average. That's insane.
Bell had a long of 81, and Blunt had a long of 50. So they're breaking free some big plays. So, you know, that's what you need to, you know, that helped Roethlisberger. Let's get it straight. This is the production Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Alex Smith that we talked about earlier need to get the passing game going. And that's why Roethlisberger had a good day. You know, it's a good balance. Actually, it's actually skewed a little bit to the rushing side, but that's kind of the way Pittsburgh's always played. They've always been a run first, pass second team, and
that's
play defense.
That's true.
So.
But the interesting thing is, while everybody was down on Big Ben just a week or so ago, suddenly all of the sports talk out in the Pittsburgh region today is, oh, what a game manager Ben Roethlisberger is. Yeah, while he might not have had the numbers in the air, as you point out, Brandon, boy, oh, boy, they're hanging their hat on the fact that he was such a great game manager.
Well,
it is
yeah,
kind of hysterical because next week, let me just see here. I just want to see who they're playing next week.
They're playing Buccaneers, Tampa Bay, in Pittsburgh. So they're probably going to win that game.
They should win that one. They're a 7.5-point favorite. But the bottom line is if he goes out and has a really bad day, you'll start to hear that talk radio completely turn around again in Pittsburgh, and they'll be screaming for his head.
Well, let's just keep one thing in mind here. Carolina Panthers have had quite a few injuries on the defensive side of the ball. As a matter of fact, from what I was reading, they were ready to sign, you know, anybody off the street to play linebacker for him. And that's clearly, you know, if they're hurting in linebacker, you know, Luke Kuechly can't do it all by himself. And that's why they had a good game on the ground rushing. You know, you gotta just take it for what it's worth. I mean, Pittsburgh has looked horrible in the first two games. You know, they weren't, you know, anything to write home about. They got lucky hitting everything but they hit Carolina at a good time for them. They matched up real well against Carolina, you know, with Carolina nursing injuries, you know, and they got a break there. So, and they're probably getting a break here this week too. Tampa Bay's kind of in a little rebuild mode. Lovie Smith is first year, but Lovie Smith knows how to play defense. So let's see I bet you this game's a little tighter.
And they didn't have a bad defense. He inherited a pretty good defense with that team anyhow, walking in the door.
Actually, I'm kind of surprised they got off to the 0-3 start. I kind of thought they'd be a little better, and their points against is a lot higher number than it should be for a Lovie Smith coach defense that was, you know, going in on paper, you know, pretty decent to start with. I'm not quite sure what's going on there. I can't say that I've watched a whole Tampa Bay Buccaneer game yet. They certainly got their butts handed to them last week on Thursday night by the Atlanta Falcons, and that's why their points against is really skewed high at the moment. But they still need to play a little bit better than they are. And, you know, they're going through the quarterback, you know, switch over right now. They're going back to Glenn and see how he goes. You know, Lovie Smith has said, you know, all the right things about Glennon, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's sold on Glennon. Anyway,
well, hopefully we'll get a couple of moments to talk about some of the quarterback situations going on there. Let me just go over real quick. We've got, I think going into last week, I think there were seven. We're now down to three unbeaten teams remaining in the entire NFL. And as I like to point out, or at least I think I pointed out in the outline that I sent over to you, three of what I consider to be the I wouldn't say most improbable, but pretty darn improbable teams. Three unbeaten teams in the Cincinnati Bengals, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Arizona Cardinals. All three teams, 3-0. And that's it. Any of them jumping out at you there that you think are either legitimately 3-0 or perhaps maybe are just getting a little bit lucky at this point? And I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to tell you right now, that Philadelphia Eagles team, I think, is darn lucky to be 3-0.
Well, they might be darn lucky, but they've managed to come back. I mean, that opener against Jacksonville was looking pretty bleak at halftime, and they came back and won the game handily. The game against Washington last week, you know, it was a nail biter all the way to the end, but, you know, they played well. They didn't give up a lot. Cousins looked good, but, you know, the Eagles also look good on offense. I think they're all legitimate. I don't think any one of the three have backed into it. The most surprising is Arizona. I mean, they've beaten, you know, they beat the NFC title game last year, essentially, in the 49ers and Seahawks. I mean, those two played to go to the Super Bowl, and they've managed to beat both teams in their conference. I think that's with a backup quarterback. That's got to be clearly, you know, one of the most impressive of the three. But if you look at the divisions, you know, the other two are in. You know, the Bengals are in the AFC North, the Ravens, Steelers, and Browns. None of them jump off the page at you as being, you know, a dominant team. In the Eagles in the NFC East, you know, the Redskins look better under Cousins, but the Giants are abysmal, and Dallas is up and down. You know, I think they're both, all three teams are on their way to making the playoffs, and clearly the Eagles and Bengals have a pretty easy path to win their division. I mean, I think the Cardinals still have to face, you know, Seattle and 49ers again, and as the year progresses, you know, maybe they'll, you know, maybe they'll keep winning. I don't know. But, you know, they can't be disappointed with their start, that's for sure.
Nick Foles right now rated the number one quarterback in the entire NFL based on yardage. Mm-hmm. The Eagles offense right now ranked number one in the entire NFL, while the Eagles defense right now, I think, ranked 28th. Not a completely dissimilar situation to what we saw last year, where I think the Eagles ended up damn near close to being dead last. At season's end, I think they were 31st. But I don't know. I'm just not sold on this quarterback. I don't know why, but I just can't. I can't buy this number.
You're probably the only one. I mean, Foles.
I know.
Is turning heads left and right in the NFL. Chip Kelly is certainly playing him. You know, making the best. You know, making the best out of what he can do. And them adding Darren Sproles in the offseason was like a genius move. I mean, Darren Sproles has been incredible. I'm kind of surprised you're not hearing Shady McCoy squawking a little more, but they're playing the dual running back game as buddies right now. So as long as they're both happy and nobody gets their nose out of joint, they could put up some impressive numbers.
Well, the Eagles don't have the downfield threat in DeSean Jackson any longer. So what's happening is more and more are keying on the running back, and I think you're seeing McCoy's numbers, his yards per carry number, are probably cut in half to what they were a year ago as a result of that.
Well, he's certainly gotten off to a slow start, McCoy has, but, you know, again, look at Sproles' numbers. Sproles is putting up numbers that, you know, they didn't have a number two running back putting up the number Sproles is. So, you know, he's definitely taking away a little bit of McCoy's touches, be it, you know, catching out of the backfield more so than the handoff per se. But, you know, I don't think they're missing much with DeSean Jackson. I mean, yeah, Macklin's back. Macklin's not quite the deep threat DeSean was. Riley Cooper is what he is. The new guy, Matthews, is looking pretty good. And
yes,
Zach Ertz seems to be, you know, becoming more of a, you know, staple at tight end. I don't think that's going to hurt them. The downfield threat isn't really an issue for them at the moment. They're able to move at will, it seems. So, you know,
the dynamic that I think the downhill or the downfield threat gives you is that you've got the ability then to take a player like a McCoy and run him a little more freely out of the backfield.
Absolutely.
If you don't have that, your defense is going to be playing up a little bit more. They don't have to worry about be playing as far back into the secondary, so they're going to be playing forward a little bit more in that way. Then you're going to obviously have a little more emphasis being placed on what's going on in the backfield. Real quick, let's take a look at something that I found a little bit of an anomaly here, and that's that Cincinnati Bengals team. Andy Dalton right now for the entire season. Brandon, two touchdowns through three games. That's it. And this team is 3-0, huh? What the hell's going on here?
You know what? I can't explain it to you, but they seem to win. I mean, Dalton doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I know you're not real high on Andy Dalton, but at the same token, you can't really argue with his results at times. I mean, yeah, he doesn't. Him and AJ Green haven't found their groove yet, but it's going to happen. You know, he Dalton's ranked right in the middle, you know, of quarterbacks. He's not throwing lots of interceptions. He's certainly not, you know, he's not throwing lots of touchdowns. But, you know, Giovanni Bernard obviously is carrying the load on the rushing side of the ball with their we're scoring. But, you know, they're going to get there. They're 3-0. A.J. Green is certainly a player. You know, he's going to get – they're going to get him. They're going to get some touchdowns. One of these days you're going to see – you're going to see, a 25 for 32, 354 touchdown line for Dalton. It's coming. It's just a matter of, you know, the right matchup.
I guess in fairness to equal time, I really should have to throw out the numbers for Arizona, who, they're unbeaten as well, but in three games they only have four touchdowns, two from Drew Stanton and two from Carson Palmer. So not a completely dissimilar situation.
Yeah, but Arizona plays defense real well. As we've
but
seen.
At the same time, we've been hearing for the better part of what, a week and a half, 2 weeks now, that defense is getting banged up quite a bit, and we're not quite sure where that's all going to end up.
Well, they said the beginning of the year, they said that, they lost this guy, they lost that guy, they had, you know, injuries fall down, how are they going to do it? But yet they still manage. I mean, the team... You know, they've managed to go 3-0 and beat good teams. They're not beating, you know, they're not thumping on Miami and Jacksonville. They're beating the 49ers and the Seahawks. So, you know, that defense is doing something right.
Right.
Even banged up and missing key guys. They've only given up 45 points. That's one of the lowest in the NFL.
Yeah, I was just going in here real quick and just checking on defenses right now. Arizona is ranked number 7. In the entire NFL. Number one defense ranking right now goes to Detroit. Yep. Your New England Patriots are ranked number 3. And the Jets are number 2. So there's how things are being ranked.
That's not a surprise. I mean, Ryan's always got a good defensive team in New York. It's just they can sign every star free agent they want at offense, and it don't seem to help them.
Yep.
I mean, they signed Chris Johnson. They signed Decker. They have Vic sitting on the bench. You know, they got Pro Bowl at every position in offense at some point in their career, and yet they're still not managing to win games. And they're already looking at Geno Smith now. It's like, all right, what are we going to do? Are we going to keep him in there, or are we going to see Vic? And reports I'm reading is, you know, Rex Ryan's on a year-to-year deal kind of. He don't want to get fired, so he's going to have a short trigger when it comes to Geno Smith. If Geno Smith isn't turning this team around and getting them more points, you know, it's not going to get it done.
Well, it didn't look very good last night. I think Geno Smith came away out of there with, what, at least two interceptions. You got to start to wonder, I mean, is he going to make a move and turn this thing over for an entire game to Michael Vick? I don't know.
Well, they got the Lions this week, so, you know, the Lions are going to – they're going to be a good test. I mean, it's in New York, but the Lions are going to – you know, they're going to score their points.
Well, we got about just a little bit over 5 minutes, about 7 minutes remaining. 347-826-9964. I love it, Brandon, because we're not even going to get to, I think, probably half the agenda items. But one of the things I had on here, which I thought we ought to just take a look at, we've seen an awful lot of quarterbacks moving around, and something I'm calling the quarterback miracle. Yeah, we got the word is right now that, in fact, the Johnny Manziel watch is over up in Cleveland. What's your thinking on this one? Right now, Cleveland is what, 1-2?
Right. What do you mean the watch is over? I'm not quite sure. Have they said?
The belief is he's not getting into a game, not anytime soon.
Okay. Well, yeah, he's like any other backup in the league. He's one injury away from being in the game. I mean, I don't think they're going to call for his head. I don't think Brian Hoyer's played bad. They're not a good team. You know, they're missing, you know, Josh Gordon is clearly, you know, one of the better receivers in the league. He's not there right now. He'll probably be back about week 10. By that point, the Browns are going to be out of it so far that it's not even going to matter. So, you know, what good is putting Manziel in? It's going to generate, you know, a little buzz. People are going to watch, but they're still not going to win. That team is just not that good. So
yep.
they're probably smart. Let him learn. Let him play his little gimmick play where he, you know, catches the ball as a receiver there and doesn't, unfortunately, got called back due to, you know, an offensive penalty. I think they had an illegal shift that took away the play that was, you know, Johnny Manziel's NFL debut. But, yeah.
Well, let me throw out another question to you hypothetically. Is it blue smoke and mirrors? Or let's get it straight. Is Kirk Cousins really a better fit right now for the Washington Redskins? Because every time we've seen him come in, he seems to light it up and plays a whole hell of a lot better than RG3.
Well, he may fit that offense better right now. You know, they got a lot of weapons. You don't need a gimmicky quarterback when you got, you know, DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Alfred Morris. You got a list. Santana Moss can't even get on the field as a receiver because they got so many, you know, good receivers down in Washington. When the tight end who's out, Jordan's healthy, he's a threat. Their backup tight end, I think, has made a few plays and scored a touchdown or two. You know, a typical drop back quarterback who's reading, you know, can read the offense, you know, read the field downfield when you have all those weapons available to you. That's why Kirk Cousins is putting numbers up. I mean, he fits what they got for players. I mean, RG3 lit it up, but when he does it more with his feet, and, you know, he's rolling out, running, and, you know, or doing an option play. You're not seeing any of that gimmick stuff with Cousins. Cousins is your typical, you know, prototype dropback quarterback. And, you know, they have enough weapons around him that, you know, even Roy Helu Jr., he's a backup running back for them. You know, he's making plays, so it's like, you know, RG3 missing isn't hurting them. As a matter of fact, some people, and I believe Ron Jaworski was one of the first beating the drum, says they're a better team with Kirk Cousins playing at quarterback than RG3.
I frankly think so as well. And here's another one I think might be better. I actually think Tampa Bay is better with Mike Glennon. We talked about it for a couple of seconds there. That's what the word is sounding like. It sounded like it's going to be Mike Glennon.
Well, Josh McCown, you know, looked pretty good you know, the Bears backup last
year. He looked good
with
the Bears. I wish he was still over there playing with the Bears.
But the difference with the Bears versus the Buccaneers is Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey and Martellus Bennett and Matt Forte. You got a laundry list of players, you know, you can, you know, you're passing that ball around to. And that's where McCown looked good, you know, in that role. Kind of the same kind of deal you got with Cousins in Washington. You got all those. That talent around you, he don't have half of that talent down in Tampa. You know, Doug Martin, their good running back, their top shelf running back, is coming back from injury. What I hear, he's going to finally be back this week. He didn't quite make it back last week because of the short week, them playing on a Thursday. But having a long week is enough to get him back. That might help get Doug Martin, get a decent running game, and, you know, Mike Glennon might have a chance. They have a few players down there that, like I said, they're a project. They're first year under Lovie Smith, so give them some time. I don't know that McCown is a bad choice. I think this is more an injury deal. I mean, yes, Glennon is going, but McCown did get hurt and left that game that put Glennon in. And everything I've read is McCown isn't healthy enough to go anyway. So by default, Glennon's going to play. And now when McCown's healthy, does he come back to the field? That's another story. But, you know,
real quick, we got less than 2 minutes, so let me just throw these two out there because the word is we've got Blake Bortles and Teddy Bridgewater apparently starting this week. What do you expect to see there?
Well, they're both playing for bad teams. You know, the Jaguars have looked better this year. I'm not quite sure, you know, Blake Bortles is going to make them, you know, even remotely close to being a contender. And Bridgewater, you know, the Vikings, they're in disarray this year. They the whole Adrian Peterson mess, they're taking away one of the best running backs in the league. Jerome Simpson, their one receiver they were counting on, was suspended and keeps getting in trouble. They ended up cutting him. They do got pieces. That's right. Kyle Rudolph, their tight end, just went down as well. They're losing their pieces, though, that they need. And I Bridgewater's probably going to be a spark, and he looked good in the limited role he played. He didn't make mistakes, and that's what they need. But they need you know, some injury, you know, people coming back from injuries and the rest of the pieces coming. And Matt Castle's done, far as I've heard.
From what you hear.
He's got a broken bone in his lower leg or something. It's not good. So he's done for the year for sure.
All right. There you go, folks. That's our wrap for this week on the Red Zone Blitz. Make sure you're checking us out here at Thursday evening with our Frat House Sports show. That'll be number 159 coming at you at 7 p.m. We will have the entire gang here for you, ready to rock and roll, talking all sports at that particular time. We'll catch you then. Thanks very much, Brandon.
Yep.